This morning's Bible reading will be from Psalms 28. Of David to you, O Lord, I call, my rock, be not deaf to me, lest if you be silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. Hear the voice of my pleas for mercy, when I cry to you for help, when I lift up my hands toward you, most holy sanctuary. Do not drag me off with the wicked, with the workers of evil, who speak peace with their neighbors, while evil is in their hearts. Give to them according to their work and according to the evil of their deeds. Give to them according to the work of their hands. Render them their due reward, because they do not regard works of the Lord or the works of his hands. He will tear them down and build them up no more. Blessed be the Lord, for he has heard the voice of my pleas for mercy. The Lord is my strength and my shield. In him my heart's trust, and I am helped. My heart's are exalts. And with my song I give thanks to him. The Lord is strength of his people. He is the saving refuge of his anointed. O save your people and bless your heritage. Be their shepherd and carry them forever.
Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. We have some that are away. We appreciate you being here. Recently, I received a request to preach a sermon on the topic of rocks. I won't mention Debbie by name as to who suggested it, but you'll have her to blame or to credit for all of this, because as I began to do that, because I always do what she asks me to do, I quickly became aware of the fact that there's a lot more to rocks than rocks. And so the result of that is not a sermon, but I've decided to use this time period to talk about all the interesting things that I found out. So for the next several times that I'm scheduled for this time, we're going to be talking about rocks and stones and how that occurs in the New Testament. It's really very interesting. The Hebrew and Greek words that can be translated by our English words rock or stone or some form of those words occur over 500 times in the Bible. And these words are used in a number of ways, some of them very simple and secular, and some, though, used symbolically with religious significance. And so we're going to look at some of those things as we go through the various lessons in this study. It is safe to say that the vast majority of the times that these words are used in both the Old and New Testament, they are used in the very literal sense to identify the very presence of objects in our lives that we would call rocks or stones. And so I think that's the obvious starting point for our study. So this morning, what I want to do in the time we have is two things. Briefly look at the Hebrew and Greek words that are used to identify these objects in Scripture. And then take a look at how these items are used in the everyday lives of the culture of the biblical people, the Hebrew people, as is reflected in both the Old and the New Testament. My source for this is Young's Analytical Concordance. Kind of just a word about that, if you happen to have a Young's at home. It is based upon the words as they appear in the King James Version. In some of the more modern translations, particularly when we get to future lessons about the symbolic use of the word rocks, you'll find that some of the modern translations, rather than simply saying rocks or stones, interpret that into the symbolic meaning that they think the passage has for the words. But the source is Young's, because it's about the easiest one to use. So the interesting thing here is that there are seven different Hebrew words that can be translated by the English word rock, and none of us are Hebrew scholars, so we're simply meeting that. And then there are two Greek words, and interestingly enough, the one we probably know best is Petra, because of discussing Jesus' comment in Matthew 16:18, where he says to Peter, "Upon this rock I will." You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. It is interesting because that only occurs one time in the whole Bible, and that's in that passage. Okay, most of the time when you read rock in the New Testament, you're reading another word. Now, on the other hand, for stone, there are at least 15 words in the Hebrew and the Greek. The door's open. I don't know. Okay. For this. These words are the various words that can be translated by the English word stone. And that first one up there, ebon, it is actually the most significant one because it is used 240 times itself in the Old Testament. So it is by far the most common word. And you might have noticed the words sila and sor were on both lists because translators sometimes translate those words rock and sometimes they translate them stone. So when we get to the New Testament, the most common word for stone in the New Testament is the word lithos. And if you notice, of these words up here, five of them are some form of the word lithos. And this is the word that comes into the English language as lithography. And it's it goes back actually to printing days when the original dies that were used for signets and things like that were cut out of stone. And so that is the much more common word. The word Petros, which is the one used in Matthew 16:18, again, that's the only place in the New Testament where that is used. So that's just the idea that you see that it is a rich language thing. We have two words, rock and stone, in the English language. But in the Greek and Hebrew language, there are all of these different words, 20-some different words, that come into our English Bibles as either rock or stone. So what we want to talk about for the few minutes we have left this morning is the actual literal everyday uses of rocks and stones as you find them in Scripture. And there's a number of these. For instance, they are used in terms of geographical reference in several ways. One of the ways the Old Testament uses them is to define borders. An example of that is in Joshua chapter 15:6. Then the border went up to Beth Hogla and continued north of Beth Arabah, and the border went up to the stone of Boham, the son of Reuben. And so there is the use of the stone as setting where the border is. By the way, that custom continued into the 20th century. Here in Ohio, because this was a part of the Northwest Ordinance that created the five states in the Northwest Territory, and the Congress had it surveyed, you can still go in places in Ohio, and at the corner of farmers' fields, you will find a stone with numbers on it. And those are the surveyor stones from the 18th century that are still in place that define the tracks in the various counties in the state of Ohio. And so this custom of defining borders by the use of stones has continued all the way into relatively modern times. Sometimes it was used to identify a landmark or a specific location. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all of Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the Rock of the Wild Goats. Okay? And so evidently there was this place that was known and identified as the Rock of the Wild Goats. Now, with my little simple mind, all I can think of as an illustration of that is the number of times that I traveled north and south, starting in the seventh grade when my dad took us to Florida to meet and visit friends of theirs from Haines Street that had moved to Florida. That was the first time I was ever told to see Rock City. And I'm now almost 75, and if I went through Tennessee today, I'd still find signs telling me I need to see Rock City. It's a place that is clearly located by that. The third way it's used in the Old Testament is simply to describe a geographical feature. Like in Numbers 23 and verse 9, as I see from the top of the rocks, and I look at him from the hills, behold the people who dwell apart, and they will not be reckoned among the nations. And so you get this picture of somebody who's on top of the rocky ledge looking down upon people. And we still see that image today. I forget which company it was advertising last night, but an ad came on the television as I was just sitting there kind of vegging, resting after the day. And there was a person overlooking a valley on a ledge, and it was some part of the commercial. So those are very common uses of this word, and it dates all the way back to the biblical time. The second way it's used is simply in reference to building material. 1 Kings 5 and verse 17, then the king commanded, and they quarried great stones, costly stones, to lay the foundation of the house with cut stones. So Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders and the Gebelites cut them and prepared the timbers and the stones to build the house. So cut stone. And of course, we still see that today, don't we, in buildings. A third way is that it's used to describe what we would call jewels, or stones that have value and are considered precious. 1 Chronicles 20 and 2, David took the crown of their king from his head, and he found it to weigh a talent of gold, and there was a precious stone on it, and it was placed on David's head and brought out the spoil of the city, a very great amount. Crown jewels. And it is used that way. Then one of the more common ways is of monuments and memorials. And maybe the most famous one of these, although there's a number of these illustrations and uses in the Old Testament, is Joshua chapter 4, when the children of Israel crossed the River Jordan. Each tribe was to pick up a stone out of the bed of the dry land of the Jordan. And verse 20 says, those 12 stones which he had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal, and he said to the sons of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? He says, that's why when you tell them about how God brought us over the River Jordan. And of course, we obviously recognize that that is a continued use. All of us have loved ones buried in cemeteries, and their graves are marked with stones as memorials. And so a very common use. Rocks and stones were used as weapons. And in fact, in the Old Testament, used in at least four different ways as weapons. One is by using the stone in your hand. Numbers 35 and verse 17, if he strikes him down with a stone in the hand, by which he will die. As a result, he died. He is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. And so there the stone is used in the hand as a part of hand-to-hand combat, so to speak. The second way is by throwing stones. 2 Samuel 16 and verse 6, he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were at his right hand and at his left. Then probably the one we're most familiar with is that stones are used as an ammunition for a sling. And so I thought I would be different, because all of you probably immediately when we said sling thought of David. But actually what Judges 20 and verse 16 tells us how common this out of their people, they had 700 choice men who were left-handed, and each one could sling a stone at a hare, at a rabbit, and not miss. So the use of the sling as a weapon in Jewish warfare was really prevalent. And then finally, to use larger stones for the greater war machines. In 2 Chronicles chapter 16, it says, "Moreover, Uzziah prepared for the army," and it tells us a number of things he prepared. But then in 15 it says, "In Jerusalem he made engines of war for the purpose of shooting great stones." And so the catapult, as you've seen in medieval movies, goes all the way back to the time of the Old Testament. Then it is used, probably one of the more frequent references in Scripture, is to using a stone or rocks as an implement for punishment, even to the extent of it being used for execution. And stoning is the most frequent use of this. Deuteronomy 17 and verse 5 is but one scripture in the books of Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy that talks about stoning. "You'll bring that man or that woman who has done this evil deed to your gates," that is the man or the woman, "and you shall stone them to death." And so that was the process of people taking rocks that they could throw and throwing them on people until they die. But that's not the only way people were executed using rocks or stones in the Old Testament. 2 Chronicles 25 and verse 11 says, "Amaziah strengthened himself and led his people forth, went to the Valley of Salt and struck down 10,000 of the sons of Seir. And the sons of Judah captured 10,000 alive and brought them to the top of the cliff and threw them down from the top of the cliff so that they were all dashed to pieces." So a more brutal, maybe, or at least more dramatic way than even stoning is throwing people off a cliff so they land on the rocks below and killing them. And then there is one reference in Judges to using a stone as a place of execution, possibly by the sword or the axe. Maybe it's a place where you run to behead somebody and you put their, made them kneel against the stone. But Judges 9 and 5 says, "He went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, 70 men on one stone." So it's like one at a time. He brought them to the stone and he killed them. And so these are all very special ways, but we also shouldn't overlook, our time's about up, that stones had everyday use in the culture of the Hebrews and of all the peoples of that time. For instance, in John 2 and verse 6, New Testament, a very famous story, there were six stone water pots set there for the Jewish custom of purification, containing 20 or 30 gallons each. And so they would carve out of stone big pots to be used to hold water. In the Old Testament, there's a couple of examples. In Genesis 29, verse 8 is one, where it says, "We cannot," and that's water the flocks, "till all the flocks are gathered." This is when Jacob met Rachel. Until they roll the stone from the mouth of the well, then we will water the sheep. So when they dug wells, they would use a stone to cover the face of the well so that no animal or other being would fall into it. And so it just had that common use of being used as a well covering. They didn't have metal manhole covers back in that day, so they used large stones to do that. In the story of the children of Israel and one of their first great victories, in Exodus 17 and verse 12, and this is from the King James, because the more modern translations just say, gave him a seat. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. So to just use it as a sitting place. And so any of you, like our outdoorsmen, I just can't imagine maybe that Andy and Diane on one of their hikes hasn't sometime just sat down on a stone. And that was done that way. And then, and I have a hard time with this because I can't, I've had a lifelong search for a comfortable pillow, but you remember that Jacob actually used a stone as a pillow in Genesis 28 and verse 11. Now, these are not all of the uses of the words rock and stone in a literal sense. These are the ones, as I said, from everyday life. Now, the next time I'm scheduled to do this, we're going to look at the literal use of rocks and stones that are related to spiritual uses, spiritual things in the religion of the Jews. And then after that, we'll go into some of the symbolic language, use of it in symbolic language. So I hope that this will at least inform us it's a much more involved thing than we might have originally thought when we just say that. And so Brother Cliff has the prayer, and then we're going to be dismissed to our Bible.